Hey, welcome to Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché. This is episode 202 live from Rahr Brewing. And we've got a special guest, got several special guests with us this week. Nathan and Shannon are off. And we have decided, we found, stumbled upon on Saturday during the game, Mr. Nick Howard. Nick, welcome back to the podcast.
Nick?
Hey, what's going on? Good to be back. I'm glad to be back.
Wait, I didn't introduce you properly. I'm sorry. The velvety smooth voice of Nick Howard.
That's what I was waiting for. The nice soothing tone of the Killer Frogs.
How have you been, man?
Oh, man, I've been good. I've been just traveling for work. I've been work for Salem Media Group now, just doing a lot of technical work and a lot of video engineering for them. So it's been good. Also, outside of that, I've been covering DeSoto. DeSoto football this year, so DeSoto High School, they're number 6 in the nation for high school, and
yeah, they're having a heck of a season.
Yeah, and they had the biggest game of the year. They played against the number 10 team in the nation, which is Duncanville, and they beat them by 3 touchdowns. So been covering video for them all season. It's been great. Right now they're in the second round of playoffs, and they've just been pretty much whooping up on everybody. So it's kind of gets boring like an outfielder sometimes, you know, just standing there and just watching a video sometimes. But it's been good.
Well, I can imagine, given the fact that you're now working for Salem, so that means you're also cutting video for politics.
Yeah.
Given the season that we're currently going into, I would imagine covering football is probably a nice respite.
Yeah, it is. It definitely you know, keeps me balanced. Some days when I'm at work, I enjoy working there at Salem, but, you know, I want to pull my hair out sometimes, just hearing some of the stuff sometimes. But, you know, definitely covering DeSoto, you know, it just keeps me balanced and, you know, keeps me close to the game. And definitely get to see the next class of athletes, that which schools they're going to. So it's been able to still kind of keep up what's going on at TCU and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Have you been keeping up with basketball lately?
I have.
Yeah? Any hot sport takes for us?
I like how Jacoby Coles is looking, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like I was telling you earlier, it was kind of expected of him, you know. You know, it was kind of like the LeBron effect for him, you know, being surrounded by so many good players like Mike Miles and other guys. And now he's got the ability to shine and show his true scoring ability, which I've seen in high school. And I played with some of his teammates from high school and college. So just seeing him actually being able to flourish a little bit, it was kind of expected. Being able to go to Butler for his first year, where they produce a lot of scoring bigs out of that program, like Gordon Hayward and stuff like that. So he's able to step up and see what TCU can do in the Big 12 this year.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season. Well, speaking of basketball, Barry Lewis from Fan Nation is here. And Barry, I think we've got some exciting news, but on the women's side.
Exactly.
So what happened this week?
So it's been a big week. It's been a good time to be a fan of women's basketball at TCU. The Frogs are 4-0. It's first time since 2018 that that's happened. Yesterday, they had an afternoon game against Incarnate Word and had 4,754 people in attendance.
Wow.
It's the most ever to see a women's basketball game since the building was renamed Schollmeyer Arena.
Really? I'm surprised by that.
So,
they came out to see Incarnate Word.
It was field trip day.
Okay.
So it was full of a lot of elementary school kids.
All right. Well,
but that's okay.
Fair enough.
Get them to be fans. Go home. Tell mom and dad. And
well, that's how we started with like the Bleacher Creatures.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean,
right.
Yeah. You got to get them young.
Right. So and they got to see a good game. It was the closest game of the four. TCU won 61-55.
Mm-hmm.
Madison Connor and Sedona Prince, we talked about them last week.
Yes.
They're two of the transfers that Mark Campbell has brought in this year. They have shot in double figures all four games. Prior to this season, Sedona Prince had 2 double-doubles in her entire career. She started this season with 3 double-doubles.
Wow.
Yesterday was her first day to not get the double-double. She did get double points in scores, but just didn't get the rebound.
You can't be perfect all the time.
Madison Connor, who's the transfer from Arizona, on Monday, she was named Big 12 Player of the Week. So the first honor of the week. So putting the rest of the conference on notice to look at Fort Worth. And then, if that wasn't enough, also this week.
Wait, there's more.
This is the big news. Haley Cavender announced that she was coming to TCU next season. If you don't know that name...
Well, you really buried the lead here, Barry.
Hey, there you go. Haley Cavender and her sister, her twin sister, played for years at Fresno State. They then went to Miami. They led Miami to the Elite Eight last year, Miami's first time to make it that far. After that time, they decided to retire from basketball. She went into the WWE, but now has decided she's coming back to basketball next season. So not only can she ball, it's her social media following that we need to be paying attention to.
Yeah, which social media? Imagine Instagram and TikTok.
4.5 million followers on TikTok alone.
Well, it's just a few.
And she and her sister have also been masters of figuring out the NIL programs.
Oh, yes.
And they have made $2 million more in NIL deals over the last couple of years.
I tell you what, that kind of experience in the locker room is going to rub off on a lot of players.
Right. And it's going to bring a lot of attention to TCU. It's going to get a lot of fans excited, and it's only going to be able to build the program. Mark Campbell's got a good things going here. Yeah.
Oh, definitely does. I mean, this is a big get.
Yeah.
And what an interesting kind of route to take to get to TCU. But
right.
It's going to be interesting to see how this team actually
right.
kind of plays with them on with her on the team. And again, just that kind of experience in the locker room is going to go a long way.
Madison Connor's only a junior. Yeah. Sedona Prince evidently still has yet another year of eligibility. So you could have all three of those on the court together next season.
That will be electric.
Exactly.
That'll be good. So, Nick, I mean, you've got like 3.5 million followers on TikTok, right?
I wish.
Yeah.
But I heard it was rumored that Haley is dating the tight end for the Cowboys, Jake Ferguson. I heard that was a rumor.
Okay.
I heard it was true. I'm not sure. But I'm like, bad choice.
Ladies know. Like Nick the tight ends.
TMZ for us.
They like the tight ends. Well, all right. Well, okay. So you buried that lead. Any other news for women's basketball?
All of those stories on women's basketball are out on our Fan Nation page on KillerFrogs.com. So
excellent.
If you want to read all about these players, feel free to.
All right. Well, thank you, Barry. Appreciate that update. Of course, you can go to KillerFrogs.com and you can find out all about the rest of the stories on not just women's basketball and football, but all the athletic endeavors of the TCU Horned Frogs. And with that, you know, Nick. We've got another couple of special guests, but he's over there. He is telling some stories, and we'll come to him in just a minute. I don't know, Jack. You done over there, or are you almost finished? Almost finished. I don't know. Hey, Tori, why don't we get you up here real quick? Tori Couch, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk a little football first before we get into story time today. Tori. Talk to us a little bit. TCU comes off of a kind of a heartbreak last-second comeback. Fall a little bit short, 29-26 against Texas. What did you see in that game that was a positive moving forward for this team?
I really like the fight I saw in the second half of that game, because in the first half, when it's 26-6 at halftime, you kind of almost had this feeling like, well, it's over. Texas is doing what they should do as the number 7 team. They're just going to come in, get this big blowout win. But to see TCU, and you know, they didn't score in the third quarter, but they at least gave the offense a chance by not letting Texas score, by not letting Texas really move the ball. So I really like the fight that I saw in the second half, and how that just felt really different from some of the other games we had seen earlier in the season.
Right, because it kind of felt like earlier in the season when they got down, it kind of felt like the air just kind of left the field for them. And then this time, when they came out of halftime, we were kind of thinking, oh, this can get really ugly really fast. But the defense did kind of stand up and did a great job against that really potent, or at least what we're told, is a really potent Texas offense.
Yeah, no, I think the defense did a great job in the second half. But I think part of it, too, is you started to see what's been a problem for Texas is in the second half. They've built up big leads. I mean, the week before against Kansas State, they blew, I think it was close to a 16-20-point lead, went into overtime against Kansas State. So I think you started to see, too, Texas had their own flaws. And I think TCU made some adjustments at halftime to kind of go, okay, we're going to push back on them and see if they can hold up. And that was really nice to see. Especially the way with the Texas Tech game, ending on interception, you just don't know where they're going to be mentally coming into a game, especially when they get down by 20 points. So yeah, it was nice to see the defense make some third down stops, make Texas get off the field, and that really helped the offense and give them energy to then go down and score and move the ball.
So I noticed you're focusing on defense. So let's talk offense for a moment. Sure. And are you kind of on the bandwagon of thinking that Briles' offensive schemes need to be reevaluated in the offseason?
I think there's definitely some room for growth there, because especially when you look at the red zone, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but like the play calling doesn't always make sense. The fourth and two, where TCU ended up not scoring and turning over on downs, it's an empty backfield.
Why? Well, not just that. Before that, it's third and four, right? Third and two, and you throw it. If you're going to go for it on fourth down, run the ball in that situation, right?
Yeah, and so just the fourth and two empty backfield just struck me as strange, because you automatically are telling the defense, well, we're passing. We're not, or maybe a quarterback design run, but that's not really what
Hoover does.
Yeah, it
hasn't happened with Hoover yet.
Yeah, that's not what Hoover, so you automatically know, oh, you're throwing. So that tips off the defense. So that was one that really struck me as a little, just kind of interesting.
Interesting is a good way to to say it.
So there have definitely been some times throughout the season where I thought Briles made some calls I wasn't really in love with, and then there were times where I'm like, well, okay, now he's utilizing things in a way that I think make a little more sense given the personnel. I think it's hard to go from Garrett Riley and what we had last year to where we're at this year. It's just such a different look, and it's just so different and hard to adjust to that it's just really hard.
Do you think it's the look, or do you think it's just the personnel that we have coming back? Because, I mean, we did graduate a lot of really good talent on offense.
I think it's a little bit of both. I think going into the season, you want the expectations you want, and that's a good thing, because you're like, okay, we know we can win. We're not going to get back to the national title game, but we can win some games, compete in the Big 12. And so I think it's a little bit about the personnel, knowing it's a quarterback who's really never started before. You've got receivers who are new to TCU, and everybody's new to the system. So I think it's a little bit of both, and you'd hope as the season goes on you see more improvement than maybe we've seen. That's why I think it's just really, really tough to see what we've seen on offense this year.
Yeah, it's been a rough year for the most part. I mean, you got 4 one-score games that go the wrong way for TCU, and of course, if two of those games go a different way, we're talking bowl at this point. And now TCU has to win both against Baylor this week and, of course, Oklahoma following Thanksgiving in order to be able to get to a bowl game. That is quite a mountain for this team to be able to climb, given what we've actually seen. So it's been an interesting dynamic seeing how, like you said, going from Garrett Riley's offense last year to seeing what we have this year. But given, again, the fact that you've got a quarterback who hasn't really played with a lot of these wide receivers, I will say a couple of things. It was really nice to see two specific performances on Saturday. One, Wiley had a really good game. And one of the things that I noticed out of him, and I don't know if it was caught by those of you who watched it on TV, the last couple of games, he was caught being called for illegal touching. And this game, he was out there directing the younger receivers to make sure that they knew exactly where they needed to be so that he wasn't covered up and called again for illegal touching. And he had a really good game. And I think there's a little bit of chemistry starting to grow there between Hoover and Wiley. The second one, of course, though, is Williams. I mean, he went off on Saturday. And I knew one of these wide receivers was going to have a game. And I'm glad it was him, because he has been overdue this year. And I think if Hoover and him can hook up more frequently, especially going into this week, and get their confidence, I like what their chances are going to be at Oklahoma. But if they can't get the chemistry going this week, I really have no idea where the following 2 weeks are going to fall.
Yeah, I like what you pointed out about Jared Wiley, because I think that's something we've been looking for this season that hasn't been there, is that leader anywhere on the field. You know, everybody defaults to the quarterback because that position has a lot on their plate, but it can come from anywhere. And for Jared Wiley to kind of start telling receivers, hey, you need to be here, hey, don't do this, and let's avoid the penalty, that's something that I think, like, kind of like you alluded to, it needs to keep happening over these next 2 games to give the TCU the best chance possible to win. Because I think a lot of games we've seen penalties derail TCU. even just simple procedural penalties, false starts, things like that, have derailed scoring drives and things like that. So for him to kind of take on a little bit of that leadership role, I think was really important. And it gave TCU the opportunity to get back in the game and put together those scoring drives. And I agree, see Savion Williams go off, that was really nice to see that. And the longer Hoover's under center working with these guys, I think you're going to see more connections like that with the receivers, because it just takes time. You know, coming into the season, everybody's asking more, how's your relationship with receivers? Because it's just that important to the success of an offense. And when you have to switch quarterbacks unexpectedly midway through the season, it's hard to just flip a switch and go, oh, yeah, everything's going to be exactly the same. So I agree. I love seeing Savion Williams go off, and they're going to need another big game from him or from maybe Jared Wiley or somebody against Baylor to be able to win and put themselves in a position against Oklahoma to get to bowl eligibility.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks for sure. Nick, you were at the game on Saturday. What were your thoughts?
I think it's just going to, like Tori said, it's going to take a matter of time, you know, switching over to a new OC this beginning of the season. And, you know, he's still trying to learn his players' sweet spots, you know, making sure what kind of touches they like and what areas where they want to get the ball and stuff like that. As well as you know, switching quarterbacks, that's always a tough transition. It's never easy. You know, Josh Hoover, I seen him play in high school when he was in Rockwall. I knew what kind of player he was going to be. You know, watching him one game in high school, I was like, oh, wow, this guy is going to be good. And, you know, so he's definitely just going to still learn to come into his own. And then, yeah, like you said, Savion, man, some of those catches he was making Saturday, man, is going to get him paid on Sunday nights for sure. I'm like, it was one where he caught for a touchdown between two people and took the hit and still was able to hang on to the ball. I was like, yeah, that's a tough one.
That was a big play.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, that guy, he's going to earn every bit of dollar he gets on Sunday nights. So I was like, yeah, this is, you know, it's nothing for TCU fans to hang their head over. You know, it's been a rough season, but it's growing pains, you know. We had a fantastic season last year, but, I mean, Sonny Dykes is still getting to learn his players. This is his second year, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like, man, we're still learning a lot, you know, and still changing the culture here, and it's only going to go up from here.
I agree. Well, that leaves Baylor coming up this week, and we wanted to bring in somebody that has a little bit of history with TCU. In fact, spent 30 years in various administrative roles under 5 different athletic directors, and was inducted into the TCU Hall of Fame. Jack Hesselbrock. Jack, get up here. Thing. Jack, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Sean. How is things with you?
Things are going great. Things are going great. So, I don't know if you've been keeping up with the news lately, but the TCU-Baylor game has gotten rebranded a couple of times, right? So, it started off, it was just TCU-Baylor, right? And then we got into the rivalry, and now it's the Blue Bonnet game?
Right.
What are your thoughts on all this?
Well, I think the rivalry was nice only because it was from grassroots. I mean, the fans decided back and forth this is what they were going to call it. I hate to force something, and I feel like it's a little bit forced. You know, we're going to have this trophy now after, 100-plus years of games.
Right.
You know, it's the skillet had its day, you know, originated back, you know, way back, the old oaken bucket with Michigan and Minnesota goes
well,
way
and
back.
Well, if I remember correctly, right, the original skillet's lost to history, isn't it?
Yes, we basically come up with a new skillet back in the late 90s.
Right, yeah. which is an interesting footnote in the historical aspect of those two teams playing each other in that rivalry. But for TCU-Baylor, I mean, you have been a part of this rivalry for a good long time.
Yes, and, very much.
And so this rivalry for a lot of alumni is the rivalry.
Right.
And it's interesting because I think a lot of the newer alumni don't really fully appreciate just how far back this rivalry goes.
Right. Well, it, you know, very, say this lightly, very similar schools, small private schools on Interstate 35. You know, there was a point there in the 70s where Baylor dominated us, and it was hard to take because, you know, you look at them, you look at us, and it's like, why are they so much better? And then, of course, you move forward and, you know, the breakup of the Southwest Conference, and once again, Baylor gets to go to the Big 12, and we get to go to the Western Athletic.
Thank you, former governor.
I didn't say that.
But
I can remember the day almost to the minute when I was sitting in Mr. Windiger's office, who was the AD then, and Chancellor Tucker came in and said, guys, we've got a problem. And he told us that the Big 12, or the Southwest Conference, was dissolving, and here's the way it was going to shape out with Baylor, Texas Tech, Texas, and the Aggies going, and we.
So it really kind of blindsided us.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I thought we at least
had some
at least forewarning that this was, but no. Tucker just comes in and goes, "Houston, we have a problem."
Well, and in addition to that, Chancellor Tucker was the president of the Southwest Conference. He was the appointed and elected president of the conference, so. Yeah, it was. It seemed a little dirty, you know.
Seemed a little dirty.
Yeah.
I like how you phrase that. So yeah, this rivalry does go back quite a ways, and of course, you know, once Baylor and TCU kind of immediately split paths, it took several years for us to actually finally play each other again. But by then, Baylor had kind of become the perennial doormat of the Big 12.
Yes.
And we were itching to kind of get back into this rivalry between these two teams. So how did the breakup kind of go down with, you know, among the athletic department? What was the reaction there?
Oh, we were stunned. I mean, it was I can remember the last year of the Southwest Conference, we were at a game in New Mexico playing the Lobos. And I remember distinctly saying to one of my colleagues, this is going to be a conference game.
Yes, it was.
And
eventually.
It was, you know, it was one of those where you'd been used to going to Kyle Field, Memorial Stadium, the Astrodome when Houston was really rolling, Jones Stadium. You know, that wasn't what you thought of as where TCU needed to be playing. And, you know, you start getting into, you know, other sports, too. Maybe playing San Jose State in basketball and UNLV in baseball. It just one of the things Coach Sullivan did back then, he was the head coach when the transition occurred, was he would tell recruits, I remember being up there on Saturdays, you know, where would you rather go for a weekend? Would you rather go to Hawaii or San Diego or Waco or Lubbock? Well, you know, we were trying to sell it.
Well, that's one way to sell it.
And, of course, I'm sitting there with some old-time coaches going, well, it depends on if I'm going for a football game or not.
Yeah.
If it's a Saturday in the fall, I want to be in Waco and Lubbock.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I
don't know. I mean, you know, Hawaii's kind of nice year-round.
No,
saying.
It was the one time we went. It was
nice. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it was that one time. Yeah. And San Diego's, I mean, now San Diego's a little different situation, but San Diego's kind of nice year-round, too.
No, and I have to say, the Western Athletic partners, as well as the Mountain West, they were great. You know, we kind of established ourselves as the king in the Mountain West. And they did a lot of things over the years to promote that. I mean, we were kind of the outlier, but yeah, we were the bell cow. And in conference meetings, they made no bones about it. They wanted to promote TCU. They wanted to promote what we were doing. And they could have easily, you know, treated us like, you know, you're just lucky to be here. It wasn't that way at all.
Well, let's go back to Baylor here for a moment. So back in the days of the Southwest Conference, the rivalry, talk to us a little bit. What did the rivalry mean to the alumni, to the students back when you were at TCU? Because you're a class of, what, 1982, right?
Correct.
Right. So when we're talking late 70s, early 80s, what did this game mean to the student body?
Well, it meant a lot because you have to remember Baylor was in dire straits in the early 70s. In fact, you know, if they would win one or two games a year, that was positive. And then they hired Grant Taft. And after an initial year in 73, he turned it around and went to the Cotton Bowl in 74 and had a major comeback against a powerhouse Texas team.
Very, very much like Briles' rise when he got hired at Baylor.
Right.
Right.
And we were, you know, we envied it. It was jealousy. It was, why them and not us? And Coach Taft continued that through the 70s, the 80s. I mean, they had very good teams. They were going bowling every year or regularly, and this was back when there was less bowl opportunities. We had our moments, but it was, Baylor was ruling the roost. And I will say, being involved with football scheduling all those years, I have to say Baylor and Tech were very agreeable to play in a Mountain West TCU. And you couldn't get the other two left to even think about it.
I wonder why.
Yeah, it was, they wanted no part of TCU, where Baylor and Tech, they were willing to do four-year deals, you know, two here and two there. And, of course, you know, one of the, probably the most famous ones was Gary Patterson limiting a Mike Leach offense to 3 points one night. And
yeah, that was a sweet game.
That was a sweet game.
That was really nice. And I remember that one. And there were a couple that weren't so good.
Yes, there was one in Lubbock the year before that was terrible.
That was we won't speak of that one again. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but holding them to 3 points, especially Mike Leach, that was special. And I did remember that it was interesting going from the WAC and Conference USA and the Mountain West and to kind of see how the old Southwest Conference alumni kind of treated TCU during that time period. And sure. Baylor was, it took a few years, like I said before, but Baylor was agreeable to at least play TCU.
Right.
Whereas a lot of the other ones were not. And
right.
And how did that come about? How did those discussions start with the like Baylor? Was it approached from TCU side, or was it something that Baylor was just kind of like, well, we kind of need an extra game and we like playing you guys and this is a storied rivalry?
No, it was initiated by us. Basically, you know, this rivalry matters. It's got such a historical significance. It's close. You know, you can jump in the car that morning and get to Fort Worth or Waco if you're either fan base. And, I mean, it didn't hurt that Baylor was struggling at the time. We thought that would be a good time to, you know, get back into that.
So, in this particular case, Baylor, TCU approaches Baylor. Baylor says yes. And was there any... was there any feeling that, you know, maybe they had made a mistake? Or because, I mean, there, some of those games were pretty rowdy to begin
right.
with. I mean, was the relationship continue to prosper and grow? And what
no,
was it? Was it a good relationship during those years?
It really was. We extended it along with basketball. They came to an in-season tournament that we had in which Billy Tubbs won the tournament. We played him in baseball. No, I don't think they would have scheduled an 8-year deal with us, but I think, you know, they were willing to do the four. And you're right, probably one of the most memorable ones was when Robert Griffin was there and they came into Fort Worth and they were expected to do a lot of things, and I think we beat them 45-10 or something like that. We
really that was a good job Big 12 game. Yes.
That was the Big 12
game. That was the game. It's an interesting one, and it's interesting to kind of see how the staffs of those two teams have kind of switched places
now,
a little bit over
now
the time.
Now in opposite places.
Yeah, it's interesting how history kind of looks back at that particular game. Overall, over the years, this game is one that I think a lot of people outside of the state of Texas don't fully appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't quite get the same kind of look as, you know, Oklahoma, OSU, Texas A&M, even though that game is finally starting to get back up again when Texas right. goes off to the SEC. But this was up until the dissolve of the Southwest Conference, it was like the longest running rivalry in college football history.
It was, yes.
I mean that is amazing.
Yes.
And the fact that we didn't really have like an official name or a crazy trophy or anything to go along with it
right.
just kind of shows, it kind of underscores just how far back this thing actually goes.
Right. And there's been, I mean, you go back the last, I hate to date myself here, 50 years. There's been, some really monumental, things that people won't forget. The 61-58.
I'd like to forget that. I was on the field when they scored that last. I'd like to forget that, but my best friend, who was a Baylor grad, who was also on the field on that day, will not let me forget that. But
let me tell you how that even extended. We went to Baylor that year in basketball. And we were at shoot around the day before, and it had up there home 61, visitor 58. Now that doesn't just happen.
Yeah, well, no, not really.
Not on a Friday afternoon when the team's having a shoot around.
Yeah, that's true. It does not just happen naturally. It's not an organic thing that comes about. No.
And then the next day during the game, Coach Briles is directly across from us, Art, and they of course pan him and everybody goes crazy, and their band, which is always just to the left of our bench, starts chanting 61-58, where the whole place goes crazy, and we're just kind of going, really? Really?
Well, it's Baylor, what can you expect, right?
And then to the ones in the 70s, there was the unfortunate incident with Coach Pittman,
right?
Where he
tell this story, because I know there's a lot of alumni who haven't heard this story before.
Yeah, we were down there, and our head coach then was Jim Pittman. And during the course of the game, Coach Pittman collapsed and was taken to the hospital. And we rallied and won the game, but unfortunately, Coach Pittman passed. And so, you had a whole football team, a whole community that, lost their head. And he was a well-liked man. This wasn't.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, this wasn't something that people took lightly. And just the reaction after the game, both teams getting together on the field, praying. They knew at that point what had happened. And just. It just kind of started, I hate to say it, but it almost started a cloud. Because then when Coach Toehill come in, the very next coach, he was almost killed in an automobile accident out on 820. I mean, they actually made a call to Milton Daniel, where most of the players lived then, that night to come donate blood. I mean, he was in that kind of shape, and he coached the next year in a golf cart. I mean, he was this far from him. In fact, most of the law enforcement or the first responders said, I don't know how he lived. I mean, it was that bad of an accident. So, you're kind of going, okay, a coach deceases, coach nearly gets killed. And then after that, there was another hire that was really great guy, but put us back. Recruited like it was the 50s. Kind of looked at it like They're college men. They know what to do. Went a lot of discipline. And we sunk further into the bottom of the conference.
Yeah, that was it was an unfortunate kind of a slide at that point. And like you said, it did kind of start this kind of like downhill
kind of
momentum. And it did kind of feel like we couldn't quite get out of our own way for a while.
Well, and then in 74, we were down playing Alabama. And a running back named Kent Waldrop goes on a sweep and gets tackled. Comes up, can't move, and he's paralyzed forever. So it's like, you know, what else is going to go wrong right now? And then most people, the only ones that I think will remember were there is the last game of the year we played Rice, which was fitting at that time. And there was a lightning storm or thunderstorm, and lightning bolt hit the entrance or the exit where the team came out. I mean, not when the team was coming out, but it was like lightning just hit right there. And, you know, this is like 76, 77, it'd been 75, 76, and you're kind of going.
It's kinda, is that a sign?
Is
or,
this not yeah. supposed to be good for us?
Yeah. Yeah, and that was it's interesting because when, you know, a lot of the younger alumni who've kind of been with TCU since, you know, like say the Rose Bowl years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've known TCU as having all of this success. For the alumni that lived through, you know, the 70s, the 80s, the, you know, the NCAA issues that we had back then, and then the 90s. You talked about Coach Sullivan and the 97 season where we went 1-11. Thankfully, we beat SMU,
right.
But and then got pepper sprayed for the trouble.
Getting on that.
But yeah, I'm not saying Ryan was pepper sprayed. I'm not saying she wasn't.
She was on the goalpost.
Yeah, she was hanging on the goalpost, folks. It was quite a day, but for a lot of us alumni who went through, you know, it was basically almost like 35 years of TCU just not seeming to get any traction.
Correct.
And not being able to kind of get out of their own way. And you were there. You weren't there for all of that, but you were there for a good portion of that. And what was the feel like in the athletic department at that point?
Well, fortunately, we had quite a few people that were colleagues of mine through many years. Some of them have just retired in the last 5 years. And they loved where they were at, and they believed in it. And it was just sort of our day will come. It's got to happen.
There was no quit. It was
just
keep working, keep working, keep working.
Right. And I hate to say it, but, you know, moral victories were moral victories. You know, go to Texas, come within a touchdown. It was like when we played them off their feet. Won the ones that you were supposed to or that it was a draw. And then, you know, maybe sneak one out. And, you know, I can remember the, I think it was the 93 Texas game. We hadn't beaten them since my brother was in school.
That was the one here in Fort Worth.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my very first TCU football game.
That's a good one to be at.
And I was there as a guest of the Texas band.
Good for them.
Yeah, it was, that was an interesting night, to say the least.
It was. In fact, that particular game, I went down afterwards because I was up in arms, so excited. And I got even put in the shower. You know, I got put in the shower and got the Dutch rub on the head. And I'm like, guys, man, this is great.
Well, and I think we're burying the lead. TCU won the game.
Yes.
So, I mean, that was what the, right. that was huge at that time. Because
right.
Texas comes in, and at that time, I was just about to graduate, and I was looking for, you know, a college to go to, and Texas was one of the ones that had offered me a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had asked me, well, do you want to come to the game? And I kind of had TCU penciled in as kind of like, maybe I'll go there too. And then, so I get there, and I tell you, those Texas players, and the band particularly, such an arrogant group of people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I had not realized just how arrogant Texas was. And, you know, of course that didn't change. We saw a little bit of that on Saturday. But I digress. Jack, that game really was, I would almost say that was kind of like the start of a turnaround, ever so slightly, for TCU.
Well, yeah, that we can do this. That we can do this.
Was that the moment where everyone at the athletic department, okay, see, if we just keep working, that's what's going to happen?
Well, and then, you know, it was during that period also that we kind of got rid of the bugaboo with Arkansas. You know, the 81 win in Fort Worth was humongous. I mean, that was like 22 years in a row. And we had this student body had these shirts printed up that showed a campfire and a hog roasting on the fire, and it said 22 is enough. And
that's
everybody
great.
Wore those that week, and we came back and won the game. And funny story about that, one of my stories is the year before, 2 years before, we probably should have beat them, but through an interception, we've heard that a few times. Late in the game, they kick a long field goal with about 10 seconds to go and win by 3. And Coach Holtz, who was, you know, the Arkansas coach and really had him rolling, he comes into our locker room. You know, you're no longer losers. You're winners. You showed it today. Well, 2 years later, it was the officials. People screwed them. We had no business, you know, they had no business dropping that game. And let's just say from around where Fuzzy's Taco is to right there where Potbelly is, there were some campus clubs in there then. I don't think it shut down all night. It was just a full time, and the scoreboard, we kept it on all night. To beat the Hogs.
It's just an overnight party.
It was an overnight
party. All weekend.
It did not end.
Nobody got to church on time on Sunday.
I'm not sure anybody did.
You know, it's interesting, you know, going back and talking a little bit about history of TCU, and it is such a storied history. And again, mm-hmm. that's one of the things that I think some of the people nationally were finally exposed to a little bit with the run that we had last year.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people have heard of TCU who've been following, you know, college football for the last 20 years or so, especially after the Rose Bowl win. But to hear some of the stories actually start to come out and, mm-hmm. and realize that TCU isn't just this team that just started playing football in the last 50 years, right?
Right.
It's a team that goes back over 100 years and has right. some amazing contributions to the game itself.
Very much so.
And so how do you... As somebody who is obviously very, very well, you know, versed in the history and the lore of TCU football, what would you tell somebody who doesn't know TCU? How would you describe how much this team or this school has on the history of the game?
Well, you know, you can go back to the late 30s with the national championship. You look at the contributions that Sammy Ball made with the forward pass. You had a Heisman winner in Davey O'Brien. Fortunately, I've been exposed to a lot of the guys that played in the 50s through the athletic director that I was hired under. And, you know, sitting at a dinner or around having drinks or whatever and having them talk about, yeah, you remember when Alabama, we went down there and spanked them, and it's just like, wow. You know, Penn State, Oklahoma. You know, it just wasn't, they were like the kids are today. You know, beating Texas was like, boy, we just barely eked it out. We beat them 28-7, you know, instead of thumping them. And then even in the early 60s, I mean, hearing from my oldest brother, his days there, they were a thorn in a lot of people's side. And then I think we started getting to a point, and this is what I will attribute a lot of it to, is spending money and hiring the right coaches and keeping committed to those coaches. But you take back in the 70s, and we had a pretty good basketball team under Jim Killingsworth. Had a chance every game, and that was something that was pretty interesting. You know, Five Slamma Jamma would come in, you know, with Akeem and Clyde Drexler and Larry Michaud and, you know, number one, number two. And the place would be packed, students out the door to get a seat. And the game was always, you know, 65 to 60, 65, 61. And, you know, some of those we pulled out. And, you know, you're kind of going, we got something here. And then with, you know, staying with Gary, I remember, it would have been Gary's first year coming back from Tulane. And that was the year we went 6-5 and played Texas A&M in the Gallery Furniture Bowl down in Houston.
That was a good game.
That was a nasty day with A&M. But
the quarterback who shall not be named.
Correct. We'll leave that one alone. But a major, major booster came up to me on the plane, and he knew I was a Gary fan. He knew I'd thrown my opinion into the mix. And he tapped me on the arm, and he says, "What do you think about your boy now?"
Ooh.
And just got up and walked back. Well, we had lost the game like 40-something to 20-something.
Oh, yeah, it was a pretty bad loss.
Yeah, in the Superdome.
Right.
And I caught up with him later that year, and I said, "Let me just tell you, I think something's good here." And he goes, "Why? What have we seen? We're beating Rice, we're beating Tulsa, we're not beating, you know, East Carolina or Tulane." I mean, and I said, "Well," I said, I had the privilege during the East Carolina game when it was, I want to say it was 31 or 30-6 at the half. The Pirates were running us out at Amon Carter. And I don't remember how I even got in there, probably to use the restroom, quite honestly. I was in the locker room when they came in at halftime, so I thought, I'm just going to sit back here like a church mouse and be quiet. Well, Gary comes in, and of course, you know, he's all defense. And he pulls up a grease board on wheels, and he said, "Guys, everybody sit down. We got this." And I'm thinking, he wasn't upset. He wasn't yelling. And he starts diagramming what East Carolina is doing. And he said, "We can shut this down." And he said, "If we can get a little bit of offense, we can get right back in this." Well, I'm thinking, that's positive, you know, obviously. The game ended 36-31, East Carolina. They got two field goals in the second half. We shut them down completely. And we were throwing in the end zone to end the game from like the 30. So we had a shot to score and win by one from a 30-6 game. And I thought, we might have something here. And of course, I never went into a game during most of Gary's years where I didn't feel like we had a shot. You know, I mean, Clemson that year down there, you know, obviously the Rose Bowl, you know, people would, "Well, you'll get run out." I don't think so. I just don't think so. Because, you know, he had a way to shorten the game, play defense, and those kids were really tough. They had a chip. You know, they got tired of, "Well, the Mountain West isn't good enough. You shouldn't be there." And they got tired of that. And but many, many games, you know, the Tech game that year, the 12-3, where I think they were scoring 50 points a game and everybody. And the year before, they had really run us out in Lubbock.
Yeah, and they were going to say, they said that they were going to do the exact same thing that next year too. Yeah.
Yeah.
They came in saying, "Oh, we're going to blow you out."
Right. Yeah. How bad is it going to be?
Yeah. And they get three.
Right.
Yeah. That was huge on that night.
It was huge.
It was. Because that was the number one offense coming into that game.
Right.
And Patterson just shuts them down completely.
I mean, just shut them down. Yeah. That was the Marvin Whitehead.
Yes. Yeah. The great white hit, as it has become known. And he absolutely lays him out.
He does. I mean, I thought the kids was really hurt bad.
Yeah. It was, and now the bad thing about that is you look back at that hit, they probably would have called him for targeting at this point.
Oh, there's no doubt they probably would have.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I mean, he absolutely just laid him out.
Right.
And that was
down
great.
At him.
Yeah. That was great. That was a fantastic game. Well, Jack, you know, we're coming up on end of the season here. We're about to play Baylor. We got to go into Oklahoma. We got to win both of these for a bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you've seen quite a few number of TCU coaches over the years, and obviously we're through it with Patterson and the whole run that Patterson had. What are your thoughts right now on this new coaching staff that we have for TCU?
Well, fortunately, there's two or three from the past that were either retained or brought back. Paul Gonzalez was on Gary's staff. He's safeties, and I know Paul very well. Mark Tomerdahl was with Coach Franchoni. I know special teams have had their struggles, but I know Mark, and then, of course, Coach Meacham. And then I got to know Sonny the year he was an analyst. And I think, you know, last year was magnificent. I'm not certain that just anybody could have pulled that off. I think they knew that they had leaders in certain positions. Great talent, obviously. You see it on Monday Night Football and Sunday, scoring touchdowns and doing things. But I think you're probably seeing the outset of what they're going to be able to do. I don't mean, 500 or 4-6 or whatever we are right now, but I think, they'll get their players. These players will develop. I was talking to one of the coaches one night before a basketball game, and you got the 3-point loss to Colorado. I think that was a soul kisser for us. I really do. I know it was for me. I still haven't gotten over that, just from the yapping and the we're coming and all that stuff. But outside of Kansas State, we've been right there. Iowa State, I think we were defeated pretty good, but they were really upset after that game. Not from losing, because playing at Bill Snyder Stadium, they've always had a great team up there, tough team, that they didn't feel like we competed, up front, defensively. Defensive line, offensive line.
Yeah, that certainly felt like, from our perspective, it kind of felt like the game where the team just didn't really get off the bus, so to speak.
No, exactly.
Right?
And that was the theme I've heard at practice that week, because I was one of the brave ones that went out there. And it was, we just didn't get after it. We didn't, I don't know. I can't explain it. And I understand that. I mean, they're 18 to 22-year-olds. It was a little puzzling given the magnitude of that game as far as what it meant to Kansas State. I mean, they were loaded for bear. It's always a tough game up there. You've got the Patterson connection over the years. And, I unfortunately went to the game. And I'm sitting there going, what are we excited to be here? And it just didn't look like it. Conversely, I went out to Lubbock, and there's an error here, there's a mistake there, and hope there's no Red Raiders here, but we're a lot better team than they were.
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah. And that seems to be kind of the MO of this team, right? It's when they show up to play, when they put together four straight quarters like BYU, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. It's
right.
Like this team can compete with anybody.
Right.
Right. We saw that in the second half against Texas.
Texas, right.
But when this team is not mentally there, it's the Kansas State game when they have one or two things bad happen to them, it's the Iowa State game, it's the it's the Colorado game, it's and it's, are you feeling like this coaching staff has the capability, like you saw after the Tulane game, right, in Patterson, do you feel that this coaching staff is going to get there as well?
I do. Yeah. I really do. Because, you know, watching practices, there's no lack of intensity. There's no lack of want to. You know, like I said, I slid by there after a basketball game. Well, you know, basketball, what, ends at 9:15, 9:30? And there's still lights on in those offices and doors open. And, you know, that wouldn't be the case if they were saying, you know, let's just head for recruiting and write this off. This game is very important to these guys because of the context of TCU Baylor. You know, they feel like they let one get away in Lubbock, which is, has that same back and forth vibe. And then last week against Texas, it's like we were right there. You know, we drive down, maybe we get a field goal overtime, maybe we get a touchdown and win it. But, you know, we had the mistake before the half, and then we had the interception that was a turnover. And, you know, who knows after, if we keep the ball there and we go in and score, who knows what that does.
Or just prevent Texas from scoring off of the interception.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. Right. Or kick the field goal when, you know, you're at the fourth and two instead of trying to go for it. Right. There's a lot of areas, I think, where this team can kind of look back and kind of go, what if?
Yeah, a lot of coulda, shoulda, wouldas.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, you mentioned a little bit of last year, and I want to ask you, somebody who's been around this program for as long as you have, What did getting into the college playoffs and beating Michigan in the Fiesta Bowl, what did that mean to you?
Oh, it was unbelievable. I mean, I had the privilege of sitting with some former players that played under Jim Wacker. They didn't have tickets, and I had extra. And, of course, I did sell them to them. I wasn't going to give them to them. Not those.
Well, you're really generous, Jack.
No, I wasn't going to give them away. But, I mean, a couple of them were literally teary-eyed. They said, I just can't believe my school is here. This was before the kickoff. And then, of course, after the game, just pandemonium. You know, people hugging each other and, you know, people from the 70s, the 60s, you know, guys on that 1-10 team. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I can just imagine with the number of guys that you know, mm-hmm. and the connections that you have, right. that your phone was probably blowing up like crazy that night.
Yeah, it was. And even leaving the stadium, I ran into a lot of them, and, you know, they were – I mean, these are 45, 50-year-old men now. And, you know, they're pointing at people, you know, take that. Go Frogs, you know. I mean, and they had a good time. They were all little boys again.
That's the perfect way to sum it up. Absolutely. Well, Jack, we really appreciate you coming on tonight. We'd love
to do it.
We could easily go another 2 hours here, folks. So we will definitely have you back in the future.
Be glad to.
The amount of just stories in the history that you know for this particular team and this school. I mean, you mentioned basketball, you mentioned baseball. There's a depth there in other sports as well, and you've got a ton of stories, not just football related. We'd love to be able
and
to have you back
clean
again.
Too.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is a podcast, you know. There could be some non-clean stories, too. It's okay. It's all good, Jack. Well, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And what are you doing now? What are you up to now?
Well, I go to a lot of TCU games, of course.
Oh, yeah.
I'm able now. I mean, I go to the baseball. I go to women's basketball, volleyball. Of course, I got very close to volleyball because when the program was started in 96, Eric Hyman, who was the AD, he came in, I guess, we were going on a retreat, a staff retreat, and he said, just FYI, I'm giving you volleyball. And I was like, why? You know, because I'd had baseball, men's basketball, and football. And he said, you just need to see that side of things. And I fell in love with it. Fell in love with every coach we had, and
You got to know the players like Kramer, for instance, right?
Absolutely.
And then she came in and was a coach.
Yeah. Prentice, and then of course I remember Jill Pape, her recruiting visit when she was recruited, and she was, most people don't know this, but we started the program with only 3 scholarships. Even though you were allowed 12, we did 3 1-year, 6, 9, and 12. And looking back, that probably wasn't a good way, but what we were trying to prevent is signing 6 young women that maybe in a year we would recruit over them. And, you know, you've got seniors who aren't playing because you've just went out and,
right.
I don't want to say grab people, but Jill was, I mean, she holds a lot of records, Hall of Famer, and just real, real dear team, as is Prentice.
Well, Jack, I really appreciate it. Thank you for coming on tonight.
You're welcome.
And,
glad to be here.
You know, we look forward to a victory over Baylor on Saturday.
I don't think there's any question.
I love to hear that. But before you go, and we've kind of at the end of every podcast, we usually ask for predictions for the game. So why don't you kick it off, and Nick and Tori are still here, so I'll ask you all the same thing. But why don't you kick us off, Jack? What do you think the final score for the game on Saturday is going to be?
I think 28-10.
28-10?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I like that prediction, folks.
I don't want to pump them up, but I think Baylor's really, really in a mental downtrend right now.
Okay.
You know, with questions about Coach Aranda. Who right. I really like. I
do too. I think
two or three years
he's a
ago,
fantastic
I thought,
gentleman.
Uh-oh, they're going to continue this. But they've lost some really tough ones that, you know, come down to the end. I mean, the Houston game, I think maybe it was Houston's first Big 12 win, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
You know, there's been some others there. Utah early in the year.
Game they should have won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as we know, it's one of those places that if they get going, they can be a thorn in our side. So,
well, I like it though. 28-10. Thanks,
28-10.
Jack. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you for coming
Glad
on
to be
tonight.
Here.
Thank you. Well, Nick and Tori, why don't that was me. Nick and Tori. Nick, why don't we start with you? What do you think final score is going to be?
I got the final score being 31-14. Go frog yourself, Baylor. That's how I feel.
Oh, that's one for the record books. I like that. 31-14. There you go. Tori, how about you? What do you think final score is going to be? That might be the title of the podcast, folks. Go frog yourself. That needs to be a T-shirt stat.
Well, now I'm trying to remember what I said, Barry, for our online article. But I know I said TCU 24. I think I said Baylor 17.
24-17?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe 24-14, somewhere in that 14, range.
Right. Just 24 good guys and
yes,
17,
yes.
Yeah, Baylor.
24-17,
thank
there
you,
we go.
Barry, for looking that up. Yeah, I'm thinking that this game, I think this is going to be the game where the offense finally clicks, kind of like BYU. I think we saw a little bit of that on Saturday against Texas, especially the second half. And I think the defense is really starting to kind of understand what the scheme needs to be. I do think, though, that this defense needs like a quarter and a half to really kind of figure out people. But I think the good thing is that it's Baylor, right? And it's not Texas again or Oklahoma. But I think this is going to be a game where I think the Baylor's not going to be able to score a lot of points. So I'm with you, Jack, on 10. I'm going to go a little bit further. I'm going to say it's going to be 9 points for Baylor. And I think TCU is going to score 35. So I'm going to 35-9. Yeah, so that'll be the way it goes. All right, well, we want to thank everybody who's come out and joined us to listen to the podcast tonight here at Rawr Brewery. And, of course, you can go to killerfrogs.com, and you can sign up for a free account and let us know what you think the prediction is going to be on Saturday. And, of course, if you go to the Fan Nation, you can read all about TCU athletics from our talented writers. And it's the time where we've come to the end of the podcast, and we get our horns up, and we get to say, go Frogs! There we go.
That was good.
Go Frog yourself.